90 The Fan, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Kalish Forfar, and my good pal, who I haven't seen in forever because I don't travel anymore. No one travels as much. NBA writer, ESPN, host, NBA Stock Report on YouTube, all-around good guy, Tim Bontemps. Tim, good morning, buddy.
How you doing, Blake?
Doing well, man. Long time no chat.
I know. I miss seeing you, and I miss getting a chance to come to Toronto. Hopefully, it won't be too much longer before we can change that. But good to be on with you.
Yeah, it's you have a little more flexibility to travel here than say a Kyrie Irving, perhaps, as we all try to figure out now that Kyrie's back. When can he play? Where can he play? What the heck does this look like for the Brooklyn Nets? I know you're kind of the guy for the Eastern Conference, especially that Atlantic Division. So Kyrie returning tonight against the Indiana Pacers, we believe. What's the vibe here, man? With Kyrie, it always starts with the vibes. What's the personality aspect here with trying to work him back in for the Nets?
I mean, it is truly a fascinating situation, Blake, because we've really never seen anything like this before, right? I mean, you have a guy who, to your point, for listeners who aren't aware, Kyrie Irving hasn't played this season for the Nets because he has decided not to get vaccinated. And while for most NBA teams that wouldn't be a problem and you could play just fine, there are guys in the league who aren't vaccinated who are playing. In New York City, if you are not vaccinated, you are not allowed to go into public gyms like Barclays Center and Madison Square Garden. So he has not been able to play in home games. And back in October, the Nets decided we're not going to have a guy be a part-time player. Well, 2 weeks ago, they decided they were going to have a guy be a part-time player and said they were going to have Kyrie come back. Now, ironically, he immediately tested positive for COVID and then was not able to play for another couple of weeks. But now he's back. He's out of the health and safety protocols, and he's going to, as you said, unless something crazy happens today, make his debut in Indiana against the Pacers. And they're going to try to have this guy play essentially every other game for the rest of the season. And, you know, I just am very curious to see how that goes, because I just can't imagine a scenario where having someone play half the games and essentially having two different teams, one with Kyrie and one without him, is going to be something that works long-term. And, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll play some and decide he wants to be out there all the time and get vaccinated. I guess there's some chance the rules in New York City could change. I think that's very unlikely. So, you know, this is just something we've never seen a team try to do before. We've never seen a guy, you know, basically only be willing to play in half the games before. I mean, it's just going to be very fascinating to see what the Nets look like and how this goes, because they're truly trying something unprecedented in the history of the NBA.
Okay, so now can I put on the conspiracy hat with this then? Because you're right, there is so much about this that doesn't make sense. Part of it does to me where I go, okay, Kevin Durant has a lot of pull within the organization. They need the extra body. They don't want to run KD into the ground, so they bring this guy in. Okay. But you could convince me that part of the reason that Kyrie is returning is that this is a bit of a showcase, that this is Brooklyn being able to show the rest of the teams around the NBA, hey, if you want this guy is able to play, this guy's still at this level ahead of the trade deadline. Do you think there's any validity to the idea that he is back in part because it is a showcase?
No, I don't think so. I think it really just comes down to, like you said before, it's just about Kevin Durant's pull in the organization. And I think, you know, ultimately, you know, if he and James Harden wanted Kyrie to play, I think ultimately that's probably what pushed this over the edge to have them wanted to play. Right. I mean, I guess, is there a chance? I shouldn't say there's no chance. I mean, I guess there's some chance he could get traded. But I don't see that happening. I think everybody knows what his trade value is, right? Like, he's healthy. He hasn't been hurt. He's not playing. I mean, everybody knows what level of player Kyrie is. I don't think anyone needed to see him play for a few weeks to decide, oh, hey, we're going to trade for Kyrie Irving now, right? I think if somebody really wanted to step up and make some huge trade for Kyrie, they would have done it because, you know, he's the same player he was 6 months ago. And again, like if he was traded to just say Boston, for example, right? Just because he did play there before, he could play for the Celtics today. Like, so all these other teams, it wouldn't really impact them the way it has, you know, if he was, you know, obviously couldn't play for Toronto or the Golden State Warriors or the teams in New York, but, you know, 80% of the league he could play for just fine. So I don't think he's going to get traded the next month. I think this is, you know, I think he's going to be a net, and, you know, we'll see if he changes his mind about getting vaccinated, but otherwise, you know, we're going to be looking at a very awkward situation here for the next few months.
Yeah, I think it gets especially awkward when we look ahead to the playoffs, right? So there's, you know, right now, the way the regular season looks, he's got 22 games he could potentially play in based on the current restrictions and everything. But come playoff time, half of those games are going to be in Brooklyn. I know there, you know, people have joked about like, oh, they'll do anything to avoid the Knicks in the standings, or maybe they try to slide to the 5 seed so that they can play an extra game on the road. Like, none of that super seriously. But, like, that has to be the concern here, right? It is, like, you know what Kyrie is on the court. You know what he means to KD and Harden. But how do you prepare dual teams ahead of a playoff series? And why, you know, why is that even worth it? I know Kyrie's great, but to have a part-time player for the playoffs seems just so weird.
Oh, it's insane. I mean, the whole thing is insane. And that's what makes this, like I said before, such an unprecedented situation, right? Because you're right. You know, let's say that the Raptors have a decent chance of being in the play-in tournament and getting a 7 or 8 seed, right? Let's say the Raptors are the 7 seed and they play the Nets in the first round. Kyrie wouldn't play in that series, right? He wouldn't play if they played the Knicks, like you said. You know, who knows? Maybe there'll be other cities that change their rules by then because of the way the pandemic is playing out. So, yeah, it is going to be very fascinating to see how this shakes out. But if it was me, I would not want to be in this situation. And look, I mean, as I said before, if you go back to October, the Nets said they wanted everybody to be we want everybody on our team aligned in the same direction, right? So either essentially get vaccinated or don't play. And 2 months later, they declare that, well, we have a bunch of guys out with COVID, so we need to have Kyrie come back because things have changed. Well, now Kyrie is back and all the Nets are over COVID. So it very clearly was not about COVID that he's coming back, right? So you can sort of extrapolate from there why this is happening. And, you know, we'll see if it works. But again, if you're going into say they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals and they're still in this situation, let's say they're playing the Milwaukee Bucks, who I think are the best team in the league this year and will win the title as of now. Milwaukee's got everybody available every game. Their guys are all aligned. They know what they're trying to do. And then they're playing a team that Kyrie can basically just stay in Milwaukee for 2 weeks and wait for the team to come back and play with them there. I mean, it's just an insane thing to think about. And maybe it'll work, but I think the chances are it will not.
So the Nets have been mostly fine without Kyrie, 23-12, tied with the Bucks for second in the Eastern Conference. And the Eastern Conference has, you know, there's been the Kyrie stuff, there's been the Ben Simmons stuff, but you look at the standings and it's starting to get where we roughly thought. Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Miami, Philly, 2, 3, 4, 5. At the top of the East is maybe a little bit of a surprise in the Chicago Bulls. Tim, you do your regular straw poll at ESPN to check in on the MVP race every so often throughout the season. And I remember you asked me, you know, a couple weeks ago now to give you my five, and I labored over whether to include DeMar DeRozan, because obviously I have a deep fondness for DeMar DeRozan. The Bulls were not quite as high in the standings at that point, and I didn't end up putting him on my ballot. I think if we were to redo that today, I would.
Right.
Do you see DeMar making a push into the back end of the top five there? Are him and Zach LaVine going to cannibalize each other a little bit too much? Or does your straw poll, and when you look ahead to the next one, suggest DeMar might have some back ballot MVP buzz here?
Oh, no, I definitely think he does, Blake. And I don't think Zach will cannibalize him too much. I mean, look, to be on the MVP ballot, your team needs to win a lot of games. You need to play really well, and you need to have some big moments, right? And let's look at DeMar. The Bulls have the best record in the East. He's played awesome. He's made some crazy shots at the end of games to win games, right? So you put all that together, and he was sixth in the balloting on the first straw poll. He was behind Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Giannis, Antetokounmpo, Nikola Jokic, and Chris Paul. He would definitely be ahead of Chris Paul now, I think. I think it will be hard for DeMar to get ahead of those other four guys if they're healthy, just because, you know, look, DeMar's been unbelievable, and he's having a terrific season. It's going to be hard, I think, for him to get ahead of those four guys on the ballot for a variety of reasons. But look, if the Bulls win 60 games, they have the best record in the East, maybe he can get up a little higher if he keeps playing like this. But either way, he has been phenomenal for the Bulls. And, you know, I did not think Chicago was going to play good enough defensively with him, Nikola Vucevic, and Zach LaVine all playing together to be anywhere near this good. So I was very wrong about what they would look like this year. But I thought his fit on offense there would be fantastic, and it has been. I mean, he's basically their point guard. Over the past couple of years in San Antonio, he's become a way better passer and creator. And, you know, he's translated to that Chicago. And I'm on a team with a bunch of guys who could shoot around him. He's got all the space to operate in the mid-range, where, as you know, he's always been a killer there. And it's just – they've been really fun to watch, and he's been fantastic. So it's pretty fun to see him getting a chance to do this on a big stage again after, you know, a couple of years in purgatory with the Spurs.
One discussion that's been ramping up here in Toronto, especially over the last couple of games, is Fred VanVleet's chances at maybe making the All-Star game. And I know that might be also dependent on where the Raptors are in about a month, but where do you see his chances right now, and what does he have to do to finally make that lineup?
You know, it's funny. I have not really sat down and looked at the situation in terms of who's going to make the All-Star team in both conferences. I was actually going to do that potentially for a podcast this week before my colleague Zach Lowe did it earlier this week, and I haven't listened to his yet. But I think, to your point about Fred, it will be tough for him to make it, I think, if the Raptors are hovering around 10th in the East. And part of that is because of, like, what the Bulls are doing, right? So, like, if you go through, like you said, a lot of this just comes down to record. So if you go through and look at the standings, like, DeMar and Zach LaVine are going to make it for the Bulls. James Harden and Kevin Durant are going to make it for the Nets. Giannis Antetokounmpo and probably at least one of Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton are going to make it for the Bucks. Joel Embiid's going to make it for the Sixers. So you're already at seven guys who are going to be on the team, and that's before looking at anything else, right? So if there's only 12 spots open and there's seven guys that are automatic fill-ins, well, now you're down to five guys left. So, and like a guy like Kyrie Irving, maybe he ends up being voted in as a starter. I don't think that will happen, but he'll probably have a ton of fan votes. He might have a ton of player votes. So, you know, there's also that kind of stuff to consider too. So I think Fred is certainly deserving of being an All-Star. I think he's a guy that could end up settling into the Mike Conley territory of being one of the best players, or the best player to not make the All-Star team for a while before he eventually gets in. But look, right now, the Raptors sitting at 500 in the East. I mean, if they can go on a bit of a push here and get up to sixth or seventh in the East over the next few weeks, I certainly think, to your point, that would be a big boost to his candidacy. But whether he makes it or not, he's certainly playing terrific, and he's a guy who I think is an All-Star level player either way. So I know that won't matter much to Fred, who is obviously a pretty prideful guy, and I know would like to make the All-Star game and have that, you know, check yet another box on his resume. But it, like you said, it very well may just come down to how high the Raptors can get in the standings over the next few weeks.
Fred's Raptors playing at the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. You mentioned that you think the Bucks are, you'd pick them to win the championship. You look around the league, the Raptors also have Phoenix and Utah coming up, who are teams that are, you know, above the 700 win percentage mark. You obviously have the Warriors, and then the Nets and some of the other teams in the East. What is it that gives you that level of confidence in the Bucks? And if there was an area they were going to address between now and the playoffs, what do you think that area is for them?
When you win a championship, it changes your organization, right? Even the Raptors, obviously Kawhi left, but you know, just Blake, you're around that team. For all the craziness that's happened over the past couple of years, that year after the Raptors won the title, even without Kawhi, they carried themselves differently, right? And you look at what the Bucks are doing, and even at the beginning of the season when they had all these injuries and all these guys were out with COVID and everything was going on and they were struggling, I was around them a bunch, and there was no panic at all, right? They were just like, we know who we are. We know what we're trying to do. We are going to be just fine. And I think when you go back to game 6 of the NBA Finals and Giannis Antetokounmpo goes 17 for 19 from the foul line, has 33 points in the second half, completely takes over the game, has one of the great performances anyone will ever see, probably maybe the best single game performance I've ever seen in person, given the stakes of the moment. That confidence has carried over to this year, and I think it's carried over from the rest of the team. And like we talked about at the beginning of the interview about, you know, the Nets kind of being, you know, schizophrenic and having two different teams because of this Kyrie Irving situation, the Bucks have are completely aligned in one direction. And, you know, the fact that they have a deep, versatile team that can play big, can play small, they probably, you know, they have one of the, you know, arguably the most dynamic player in the league in Giannis. And frankly, the fact that they're playing Giannis a ton at center because Brook Lopez is hurt, I think allows them to get a lot more reps with him at center, which is the thing that they're going to have to do, I think, in important moments in the playoffs than they ever have before, because Giannis has always been hesitant to play center. So I think that will help them too. The one thing I do think they have to look at is what they do at center. Brook Lopez has been out with a back injury since the beginning of the season. He played a couple games and got hurt, hasn't come back. There's some chance he could come back later in the regular season, but he had back surgery. It's very rare that guys come back from that successfully in the middle of the season. So they may have to try to address that between now and the deadline or maybe in the buyout market. But, you know, if your other option is playing out to the Kupo at center, it's a pretty good option to have. And I just think ultimately with him, Jrue Holiday, Chris Middleton, and the depth they have around them, I think they're going to be the team to beat in the playoffs. But to your point, you know, those teams at the top of the West, Golden State, Phoenix, Utah, they're all really good. The Nets are certainly going to be heard from, whatever's going on with the Kyrie situation. So I'm very excited for these final few months of the regular season and the playoffs. I think it's got a chance to be, you know, as wide open as it's been in a while, and there should be some really fun matchups to watch.
Sure should be. And there's the whole Kyrie nonsense to watch, and we get back with that tonight. Tim Bontemps, NBA writer, ESPN, and host of your new YouTube show, NBA Stock Report. Thanks so much for making the time this morning, man.
Appreciate you guys. Talk to you soon. Happy New Year.
You too, buddy. Tim Bontemps, ESPN, NBA Stock Report on YouTube.
Great guy. That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pal, I miss seeing him around the arenas.
Oh, we know.
Did you guys sit together?
I mean, sometimes you end up sitting close. Mm. It's assigned seating.
How close?
It's you don't pick your seats. So.
Yeah.
Oh, I always wondered how that worked. I was never a part of the beat, so I didn't know. Don't know how it works.
So cool. How do you guys think the Kyrie thing works out? Because these are the NBA stories I'm most interested in order. Number one, am I now a Grizzlies fan? Number two, Scottie Barnes. Number three, Kyrie disaster flirting with the top of the top there. I feel like this is, from a basketball standpoint, Kyrie has always been one of the most aesthetically pleasing players in the game. I love watching Kyrie. I can't think of an athlete where I liked the man less, but the player more than Kyrie. Like, he is truly my, every time he talks, ugh, every time I watch him play basketball, I go, if I could choose any basketball player who ever lived, who's ever played, and I could steal their skill set, I would steal Kyrie's. Like, it is gorgeous. I love watching Kyrie Irving play. So there's that part of it for me. But just seeing how he interacts with the media, the back and forth of games maybe they lose where he's not around, games they win when he is. I don't know. I just think this is really, 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 really fun.
Yeah, fun is one word for it.
Well, I don't have any stake in it, right? Like, yeah. I don't care. Like, I don't have any equity in this. Part of me wishes Kevin Durant would get one title, but I wished he would have gotten the one last year when it was no Kyrie and no Harden, and we really could have appreciated KD for KD. But now that he's with both those guys, and they've made this kind of the weirdo super team, right? The three biggest weirdos in the NBA combining to be a super team. Three most talent to weird ratio, the highest. I don't want the Nets to win. I will find myself rooting for Giannis as the guy who does the I didn't make a super team when they face each other. So from a non-rooting interest standpoint, I love a good carnival show. I love a good train wreck. I love the potential for this to be amazing, unprecedented basketball scoring. Like, I don't know. This just feels fun. I don't see any other word for it.
Yeah. And in terms of your question about how does this all end, my guess would be that at some point before the playoffs, we find out Kyrie got vaccinated. Whether I don't know that it certainly doesn't sound like from the reporting he has now, but for him to come back and do the part-time thing and do the part-time playoff thing, like I don't know how it's tenable, like Tim was teeing up, as you go deeper into the playoffs. So I don't know what that looks like PR wise or if it gets out or anything like that. Well, it would have to get out because he'd be able to play in these places. But we're, you know, once you hit early March, we're kind of hitting the point where you can't wait any longer on, hey, maybe the government policies will change. And it's certainly, you know, I don't think the Nets would worry too much about the Raptors in a playoff series, even without Kyrie, but it certainly doesn't look like we're headed toward that kind of loosening here by April. So I don't know that New York would either. So weird one.
That'd be quite a thing though, for Kyrie, because I'm trying to speak about this without coming off as saying anything incendiary, but he is one of the faces of anti-vax, right? Like, who is he's taken a stand here. And there are a lot of players in the league and in multiple sports leagues that agree with Kyrie but didn't have the equity, the money, the whatever, the conviction to do that, like Kyrie Irving. Part of his brand, part of who he sells himself as, for good or for bad, is someone who is anti-establishment, that he is not willing to play by the same rules as everyone else. And if he does get vaccinated, I don't know how that impacts the way he's viewed by his peers, which they seem to really unanimously respect the guy with those convictions. Like,
so
I don't
know.
Here's
the thing, though, is that you're in a situation where you're either going to have people who question that stuff from, you bent once it was playoff time side, or you're going to have people who are like, okay, you abandoned your team for the playoffs. Like, he's kind of backed himself into a little bit of a corner here where, you know, optically there's not a way to win if Brooklyn makes a deep playoff run, because you're either going to have the people who are like, oh, voice of the voiceless, standing up for what he believes in, but you're also going to have the side, you know, the true hoopers and the you abandon your team in serious moments kind of thing. So
sure.
Basically what I'm saying is I don't know that any of that stuff will affect Kyrie's decision beyond what Kyrie thinks and feels.
Yes, but Kyrie's an egomaniac. I've compared him to Kanye before, where there is a genius to him, but nobody really wants to hear about it. And the genius that you have is not the genius that you think it is. And so to me, I actually do believe Kyrie fashions himself a Colin Kaepernick type figure, that he views himself in that similar fashion, a leader. And so for him to go out and get that vaccine, he loses, I think, more of that element than the true hooper angle of this thing. Because I think that amongst basketball people, they know Kyrie's a true hooper because of the way that he plays. He's a 6 foot what? One guard? 6 foot two guard who is better at scoring inside than most centers? Like, he is he is Kyrie Irving. He is a hooper. I think he does have that sort of respect. So I don't know. I love this conspiracy that you've outlaid for me, or that you've outlined, that you've put out here. This is finally, yes, you know, I love it. The idea that this guy got vaccinated. I hope he is vaccinated. God, I hope that he does it. Maybe this will show some humility, some rationality from a guy that has shown very little of that throughout the last few seasons of his career. But I'm having a hard time believing it, because I don't think that Kyrie's position is fraudulent in terms of the way that he puts himself out to the world. Like, this isn't the flat earth thing where he can kind of be like, oh, I was tricking you and I wasn't really thinking that there's the edge of the world. This one comes with some gravitas. This comes with some weight. This comes with people that he quote unquote stood up for saying, well, you were a fraud all along. And he loses that status in his brain of being, he's not Colin Kaepernick. I'm trying to make this very clear. I do not think he's a Colin Kaepernick. I'm saying he loses that Colin Kaepernick status in his mind only. And yeah, to those that view him as a Colin Kaepernick to that cause.
Yeah. I don't know. Trying to figure out Kyrie is a whole grad school seminar.
I would take that class. I would take that class. 100% sign me up for that class.
Let's take a breather, give your brain a rest, JD, and then when we come back, we'll talk to Craig McTavish, former NHL forward and head coach, current Sportsnet analyst. Tee up that Leafs-Oilers game tonight. That's next on The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to The Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's our last block of Hump Day. It's been a good one.
Yeah, but then it's Baby Friday.
And then it's Baby Friday, so the vibes will just continue to grow. The vibes in Edmonton, however, not great. Let's talk to Craig McTavish, former NHL forward, head coach, and current Sportsnet analyst. Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Alish, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing much better than the Edmonton Oilers, let me tell you that. We've been talking about their return to Toronto with, you know, Zach Hyman, obviously a familiar face and somebody that Leafs fans still love and appreciate. But what's going on with the rest of his team and that just Edmonton in general? What's going on?
Well, I think it boils down to a couple of things that have been well documented over the last little while. It's, you know, a byproduct of goaltending and depth. And when you look at the top teams in the league, they're all teams that have save percentages that are much, much better than the Oilers are right now. The Oilers ran into injuries with Mike Smith that have really hurt them. And, you know, they were able to score themselves out of it earlier on in the season. But, you know, teams are – it's getting down to a bit of crunch time now. Teams have well-constructed game plans going in against the Oilers, and they're just not able to score themselves out of a bad goal or two. And the depth hasn't been there for the hockey team either in the last number of years.
Craig, first of all, welcome to Sportsnet. They didn't just roll out the red carpet for you when you came. It was just like you were just part of the team all of a sudden. I was like, okay, welcome. Craig McTavish, yeah. Part of the team. So, you know, when you say those things about the Oilers, yeah, it's very understated. You know, so you say all those things about Edmonton, and it resonates with just about anybody that even pays a little bit of attention to that team. And the biggest issue I have is, you know, it's just like when someone makes a mistake, okay? You make a mistake the first time, whatever. Everybody makes mistakes. We can all learn from our mistakes. We try to get better. It's when we don't learn from our mistakes where you start to be less forgiving to someone. And that's how I feel about Edmonton right now. And that's why I put myself in Connor McDavid's shoes sometimes and say, how would I be feeling if I'm Connor McDavid right now and I'm the best player on the planet? And yet again, we have no goaltending. And yet again, we have no depth. And yet again, there are issues on the blue line. I have difficulty seeing that these problems are the same over and over again, and I wonder what you think this says about just the future of what is going to happen here with this team when they've already had these opportunities to correct it and it hasn't been done.
Well, I think those problems are they're complicated defects. And you go back to the root cause of the depth problem. To me, over the last 7 or 8 years, when I look back in the cap era that we're in now, and when your top guys are paid to the level that they're paid now, you need to establish your depth internally in your organization with second round draft choices. And the Oilers, for whatever reason, for the last 7 or 8 years, have traded away, I think it's 7 second-round draft picks in the last 7 or 8 years. And in the cap era, that's a problem, because that really inhibits your depth. It's your depth in your organization. It's your depth in your American Hockey League. And, you know, those second-round picks are currency in today's NHL. So if you want a rental player, that's the currency that people want in return. And the Oilers have always, you know, been under pressure to make these deals, and they're under pressure again this year to do something to bolster the current group that, you know, probably isn't good enough right now to win a Stanley Cup. So I think it gets to the root cause of the depth problem, and I think that's it with the Oilers. And you know, Mike Smith was brilliant last year. I mean, was it a gamble to sign him back as an aging goalie? A little bit, but given the alternatives, it looked like the best alternative at the time to give him another opportunity, and it hasn't worked out because of the injuries.
Yeah, and I do view goaltending as a quicker fix, as something where Koskinen comes off the books, and Smith only makes $2.2 million, I think, like a little over two, somewhere in there. And so that to me is not as big of an issue. It's an obvious issue now, but moving forward and changing the complexion of this team is not as big of a deal.
Yeah, I think so. And I look back at the last time the Oilers went to the Stanley Cup Finals. It was a pretty similar situation where the goaltending, the team was good. I mean, we had lots more depth then than they have now. We didn't have the high end talent of Connor and Leon and RNH and I mean, we had Pronger, but
it's pretty high end.
Went out and got Dwayne Roloson at the deadline, and it turned a team that was struggling to get into the playoffs to a team that, you know, probably should have won that year. So, and given the current set of circumstances, the longer the Oilers wait, now I have no idea what's on Kenny's mind, but I think the longer they wait, I think the better the goaltender will be that they'll be able to acquire, because as you guys all know, that, you know, the cap rolls off and you're able to add bigger contracts the further you wait. So, I mean, it hasn't been desperate up until this point in the season, but it's starting to be now. So the pressures are starting to build to do something. I mean, Skinner's played well. I mean, it's a gamble too, because he's a young goalie, but he's really played well. All indications are we'll see him tonight. But I think the longer. I mean, Kenny Holland's been doing this for a long time, so I'm sure I know he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. So the goalie thing we just outlined seems like an easier fix moving forward. It's more understandable, too, especially given that Holland didn't hand out the Koskinen contract. I guess I would have a little bit more difficulty, even as good of a player as Zach Hyman is. You still handed him term, and you still handed him real money on a team that needed depth. And you just look at the Leafs, right? The Leafs were the same spot where they needed more depth, and the way that Kyle Dubas ended up spreading that money around through a Bunting and with a Kasha and a Kampf and how effective those players have been. If I was McDavid and I was facing the Leafs, I would be thinking about those things tonight. And so this is sort of the incendiary question that everybody always asks anybody with a connection to Edmonton, but it does have to be asked, which is like, you end up missing the playoffs this year, you're the best player on the planet, and you find yourself a season from now in a similar situation where you're questioning the depth and the goaltending and the rest of this roster. Do you think that McDavid, when you're talking about the pressure around the Edmonton organization, do you think that extends to that guy finishing his contract in Edmonton or him wanting to finish his contract in Edmonton?
Well, it's always a popular dialogue out of the East, especially out of Toronto, that Connor's going to leave.
And, yeah, because he's coming here, Craig. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, well, that's the wish for all Ontario and Leafs fans. But until I hear that from Connor, I don't believe it. I think, there's all this dialogue out of Toronto that, you know, Connor's this empathetic figure, which I don't really get. I mean, if you're the best player in the world, life's got to be pretty good, I would think. Regardless of where you're playing in the NHL, I would think life is pretty good. And there's this dialogue that, you know, we all feel sorry for Connor, which, sure there's an amount of frustration there, I would think, but ultimately, I mean, I feel like the team will turn around. When you roll the calendar back and you talk about all these great acquisitions that Kyle made, which are true, when you roll the calendar back to the start of the year, there was a lot of vitriol in the air surrounding the Leafs when they didn't get off to a great start. And the dialogue was, how could you let Zach Hyman go? He's lighting it up in Edmonton and so far. So these things ebb and flow. And when I look at where the Oilers are in the standings, I still think they're in decent position. I think the teams around them are comparable teams. Depth, as we talked about, is an issue when you run into injury problems, with which the Oilers did. It hurts teams that don't have the depth more. COVID issues hurt them more. I still think they're a real dangerous team when they're healthy. They got to solve the goaltending. And then, like I said before, that'll be a significant uptick.
So a new goaltender could definitely be what reinvigorates this team, but a little bit more difficult right now. What about the rumors around a coaching change? I know Mike Babcock's name has been floated around, and you see what happens with the Vancouver Canucks. They get a new head coach. They get this new spice to their team, this new energy. Is that something you see that could be in the future for the Oilers?
Oh, being an old coach, I'm never an advocate of a coaching change unless the spirit of the team is broken. And, I watch the Oilers a lot, and I don't see that at all. And, their spirit is there. The work ethic is there. The try is there. And all the things that you could manage as a group from a coaching staff, I think, are there. I mean, you make a good point with Bruce Boudreau. I mean, those types of changes and upticks are really rare. And, you know, it gets to the discussion again about, you know, how much does a coach drive performance of the team? And, it's always been my philosophy that it's not much. And I've seen lots of studies done on that, and it's a bell curve. I mean, it's a couple, 3 points either direction over the course of the year, with the odd exception. And the Oilers have been down this path before many times, and it hasn't produced the results. Certainly, the Bruce Boudreau results. I mean, that's an amazing story. I mean, I think it speaks to the fact that the spirit of the Canucks, or at least some of their top personnel, was gone. and that's turned around. But, you know, in terms of David Tippett's ability as a coach, I mean, his ability, in my opinion, he's a very good coach. And it's not his first rodeo here. He's coached in the NHL for, you know, around 20-plus years, I think. And I'd be shocked if that was the case.
Well, the Edmonton Oilers are back here in Toronto tonight at 7 o'clock, and we're not sure if we're going to see the Matthews-McDavid matchup that we've been anticipating, as both are kind of in the COVID bubble right now, trying to get negative tests. But nonetheless, it should be a good matchup between these two Canadian teams. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Craig. I really appreciate
it. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Craig McTavish, former NHL forward, head coach, and current Sportsnet analyst. Welcome to the team, too. Happy New Year. All of the above.
That was great. So many levels of why that was great. He's actually a guy that still gets to say we about the Oilers. But as someone who grew up out west and who lived with the... that's a lot of noise coming out of Toronto, you know, like living with those friends and family members that cheered for the Oilers and the Canucks and the Flames. I love being a part of that, you know. It gives me great joy to be a part of the noise out of Toronto. How dare he throw it back in my face that I have been up and down with my Hyman takes? How dare he? But no, I'm sorry, but that is the bigger issue. The goaltending, giving Mike Smith $2.2 million when that was sort of the hand you were dealt with Koskinen, and what were you going to get with that position for better money, running that back? That's an excusable one. Hyman thinking that he could fit with McDavid is totally understandable. Why? Because he fits with everybody. And so putting a player like that next to McDavid makes a whole lot of sense. But we knew with the Oilers, we knew, everybody knew, your depth sucks. Who is going to score other than McDavid? And the solution was simply, let's invest more money on the McDavid line? Huh? No. You don't get to be the Zach Hyman team. You're not supposed to be the Zach Hyman team. And yes, some of this is revisionist history now, but also... that's what we do. We play the results here. I don't know. I just think this is now a more and more difficult situation to navigate. You're not trading Hyman. You're not trading Dreisaitl. You're not trading McDavid. I don't know what they end up doing with Nugent Hopkins, but I don't think you're trading him, because my understanding with everything that happened with Nugent Hopkins was, one, that his deal was like pretty team friendly, and it was very long. And while it's not the most money for him, I think he has a no move clause as well on that 8-year deal. So like, your core is tied up in a way that even Toronto's, if they wanted to make that Marner move, it's not tied up the same way, right? You have way more flexibility with Marner or Nylander or anybody in terms of trying to make a move like that. Those guys are there. Like, that big part of your money is sunk. It's in. You don't move it. You can't do anything about it. And so what? Draft picks? Okay, well, you need to use those draft picks to acquire depth during the season that's going to come – like, it's coming at a cost. I just don't see a quick fix for Edmonton here. I see a team that is really fatally flawed and has a real problem. And it's also difficult for me to hear the excuse of, well, it's hard to build depth and it's hard to build the thing. Well, I've been told my whole life that the hardest thing to do is get the star power. So which is it? You know, you got to pick a lane here, baby.
You sure do. And guess what? The cap situation doesn't get any better next year, really. You have Koskinen coming off the books, but you've got another year of Mike Smith at 2.2, and Darnell Nurse gets that raise. So, you know, Nugent Hopkins is an interesting one because, you know, say this all goes to crap and, you know, he's open to being moved. You can always waive your no movement clause. He's the guy that I think, you know, contract wise, maybe you could probably find a team to take 8 years or 7 years after this year at $5 million per. But also, like, you need Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. You need guys like that producing on $5 million per That's not really the issue there. So I don't know. They're in a tough spot, and you know, they have their picks, but or some of their picks anyway. But they've traded away. You know, they're already out a third and a fourth for this year, and potentially a conditional second. So, you know, they're in a tough spot. No other way around it.
No, really, it's going to require some either picks coming and hitting or some prospects that are within the organization that I don't know about coming out and working out, or it's going to require a goaltender who is out of this world phenomenal for them that steps in and does give them the Rolison treatment. I just don't see it with this team. And that raise to Nurse coming in, knowing that the following season you're not going to be able to really move that, what, almost $6 million that you're paying Duncan Keith. Like, oof. It cracks me up to no end that they decided to give over $7 million to Cody Ceci and Tyson Barrie and thought, you know what we should do is get those two guys. Like, some of these things, I'm sorry, I know it's Ken Holland, and he's a legend in the sport, but we've seen this before, too, where some guys are amazing general managers, and then the salary cap happened, and they're not. And it seems to me like if we're looking at the track record of Ken Holland over the salary cap era versus not, it's pretty night and day. So I don't know. I just think this Oilers team is not only built poorly, not only do I not have a lot of faith that they're going to turn this around internally, but I also see an overhaul project and, a general manager that's in place that I'm not sure they move off of that quickly because of the brand of who it is. So, good luck, Connor. I have some stuff in the drafts for tonight, and it deals with your departure.
Well, that's
he might be in the NHL, as Craig said, and Craig knows it better. And it is smoke, right, until it happens. But I don't know. I have a hard time believing that one of the most competitive athletes on the planet, someone who is in his prime and knows where he should be standing historically, is just going to ride it out in Edmonton the entire time if they continue to miss the playoffs and be fourth in the Pacific. It's just it's hard for me to see. Maybe that's too much NBA brain, but
you want to go full NBA brain?
After I dangled him, he's scared to come back.
you want to get full NBA brain? Let's get tampering. We got to start the tamper. Yeah. Start the tamper. Leafs against the Oilers tonight. They've moved to -235 favorites. That's on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Leafs Nation with Gord Stellick and Brent Gunning after the game. Also have Raptors.
Told you to buy it at -200.
At the Bucks on Sportsnet 1 with the Raptors postgame show with Will Liu afterward, after Leafs Nation is done. You've got the Homer's Parlay window there. You've got the Wake and Rake Parlay. Hope you guys have a great night. We've been the Fan Morning Show.
Hump Ailes day. Morfar.
Hump Day. JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy. Have a great night, everyone.
It's Hump Day.